Hi, you're listening to my favourite Elliott Smith song. In this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi, and welcome to today's episode. In this one, we're speaking to the musician Jessica Dobson. Jessica is the lead singer and guitarist in her band Deep Sea Diver, and before embarking on that project, she played with the likes of Beck, Conor Oberst, the AAs, and the Shins. And in this interview, Jessica picked a song that I really couldn't believe we hadn't covered before. I know I said it last time when we did the Bunny Rogers episode, but again, I think it's amazing that we've done 54 of these episodes now, and there are still lots of great songs out there to do. Anyway, as well as discussing the excellent song she chose, Jessica also talked about lots of other Elliott Smith-related stories as well. So here she is, here's Jessica Dobson speaking to Elizabeth Woodstanley.
My name is Jessica Dobson from the band Deep Sea Diver, and my favorite Elliott Smith song is 245. Either Or was my introduction to Elliott Smith. And this song in particular, it's kind of at the tail end of the record. And it was one of the first songs I heard. I think maybe it wasn't. I was working at Starbucks at the time in high school. And it was kind of like around the same era when Cat Power blew up. And Elliott Smith was constantly on those CDs that we would get to play because we could only play Starbucks music. And which was fine because they had some really great selections and then some not so great ones, but 245, just, I mean, there's some of most of my favorite songs exist on Either Or, but 245 in particular stuck out to me with its simplicity, even though I know Elliott Smith, he was such a crazy guitar player and could play so intricately, but there's something really special about this simple song.
Going out sleepwalking, where mute memories start talking. The boss that couldn't help it hurt you, and the pretty thing you made desert you.
There's different tags at, you know, each of the end of the verses with different lines, and it's kind of like, it's almost like he was writing it in real time and didn't stop. And then it was just finished. I mean, I have no idea how it came to be, but it almost seems like it was written at 2:45 in the morning, probably recorded to a four track or something like that. And just kind of stream of conscious and dealing with what was going on in the moment in his head.
So at the time when you had been sort of introduced to Elliott Smith and had first heard this song and other songs from Either Or, were you thinking at that time, hey, I want to be a musician. Like, I would like this to be my profession.
Yeah, definitely. I had been writing songs since I was in piano lessons and my mom put me in lessons at age 6. And I think when I discovered Elliott, that was around the time that I was getting into finger picking on guitar and into John Fahey and Elliott Smith, of course. I would try to emulate, you know, his parts or learn his songs and then apply it to the songs I was writing. And this song in particular, with kind of that stream of conscious, really short poetic lines, I was writing a lot like that because, you know, especially in high school, you're just copying and you don't know anything else. And yeah, it was hugely influential on my playing.
I'm going out like a baby, a naive, unsatisfiable baby, grabbing onto whatever's around for the soaring eye of the crushing down.
Do you feel lyrically the song has pieces of it that, you know, you relate to?
Absolutely. I think, you know, so much of Elliott's writing was like playfully sardonic or biting or just kind of self-deprecating. And I think, you know, in high school, emo was the biggest thing, I guess, in the indie rock world. And it was kind of like, it's like you either went the Conor Oberst way or Elliott Smith or both, but I kind of gravitated towards Elliott's writing. And I think that you wanted to live in, I wanted to live in Elliott's pain because it kind of helped me fully understand mine. And that it kind of gave me the rite of passage to be that sad or to really feel kind of the, yeah, pain or trauma I was going through. And it's easy to shrug off pain and or not want to write about that. But he was pretty honest and incredibly relatable to that regard.
I mean, there's, you know, lines in this song like, "Well, everybody was laughing at me."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally. And it's like he's like fighting to find like who the culprit is too. Like, you know, he talks about his boss, talks about looking for the man that attacked me or like wanting to wave off pain with someone else's arms. And it's interesting. Yeah, like it's about him. It's about others. It's he talks about walking in a sinner's circle so the both of you can just fade to black. I don't know who the both is. What is sinner's circle? Is it drinking? Is it drugs? What was it for him at the time? You know, it's an incredibly profound song and a window into his pain.
With hidden cracks that don't show, but they constantly just grow.
From a music standpoint, you know, you had mentioned musically there was sort of a simplicity to it, which also kind of drew you to it.
Right. It's interesting, like how so many musicians, and I have, you know, fallen into this trap before. Like when you can play pretty proficiently, it's easy to get lost in your skill level or talents, like where he could do anything on guitar. And but the song always came first. It wasn't about showing off like how intricately he could play guitar or drums or orchestrate, you know, because he would make these beautiful Baroque, like later on at Figure Eight, you know, working with John Bryan, like these crazy orchestral arrangements and these sea of layered harmonies and all these things. But the song always came first. And it's, you know, someone is a legitimate, amazing songwriter when they can do that and they can write extremely stark and simple songs that hold up. And it has that kind of classic, like, it almost reminded me of like, I mean, you remember that little walk up and walk down line, and he used like chromatic walk ups and walk downs a lot. This one isn't necessarily technically fully chromatic, but like, I like how it spaces every one of his lines lyrically because it gives you that breath to kind of let that line sink in. And then those short tags at the end. And yeah, writing a simple song is sometimes the hardest thing to do. But yeah, when you can do it, it's beautiful.
Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, Either Or as a whole, or where this kind of led you into, you know, being a big fan of Elliott Smith?
I grew up kind of with a lot of 60s music that my parents listened to. Simon and Garfunkel, the Mamas and the Papas, of course, the Beatles, the Kinks. And I was really, really interested at the time in writing not only these kind of lo-fi folk songs, but kind of the backbeat swung songs. For example, Pictures of Me, the kind of dun, bam, 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 like where the drums kind of stand up and it's swung feeling. And those are tricky songs to write because they can easily come across as cheesy sometimes if done wrong. And so I think a lot of this record taught me, and this is kind of when he was first starting to add a lot more instrumentation on his records. And then, of course, things became, you know, a little bit more, I wouldn't say polished, but the production got bigger, you know, as he went on with, especially with Figure Eight and then EXO being the gateway to that one. But I learned, I feel like, I don't know, it was just an introduction to me. I feel like I really learned how to songwrite. Like I had been writing songs already, but then I wanted to go so much deeper after listening to Either Or. And I later on read the book in which, you know, themes were inspired from Soren Kierkegaard's book, Either Or. And it was interesting to kind of put those two things side by side and see what he kind of influence he drew from it. But it's a very existential, yeah, realm.
Looking for the man that attacked me. Well, every- everybody was laughing at me. You beat it in me, that part of you. But I'm gonna split us back in two. Tired of living in a cloud. If you're gonna say shit now, you do it out loud.
I was reading a past interview from you, and you had mentioned something about the piano playing, and in the interview, you had mentioned as a young girl your father taking out like a 12-string guitar and playing something on it, and that had really kind of triggered. I might be butchering this story, but that really, you know, triggered an interest in you. Is that that's kind of where you started your path down playing guitar?
Yeah, there's a picture of me as a kid when I was maybe 1.5 or 2, and I'm sitting on my dad's lap with the 12-string Takamine guitar from the 70s that was his. With that and a bowl of ice cream, and that kind of just kind of sums me up. Just like, I love ice cream and I love playing guitar. And I love my dad too. But my family was very musical. Both of my parents sang. They were in the church choir. That's how I got my start. You know, a lot of people, when you're raised in the church, you just want to be in like the youth group band or whatever, because that's, you know, that's the only opportunity you have to get in front of a guitar, in front of drums, you know, all those things. And so that was kind of my upbringing. And I took piano lessons, and then I didn't pick up guitar until I was 11, and I taught myself, and I kind of didn't lose interest in piano, but I was just like, oh, okay, this is it. This is what I want to do. I gave myself fully over to that, and then eventually learned how to play bass, drums, and synthesizers, got into that. And so, yeah, that was my upbringing.
A lot of people that we talk to, you know, mention when they kind of got into Elliott Smith, they sort of learned a lot of things from, you know, trying to learn some of his songs. Is that part of your story at all?
Absolutely. I spent so many hours at so many parks just teaching myself how to play those songs, and a lot of them being on Figure Eight and Either Or. I think, you know, Angelus was one of the first ones I learned because it was just so beautiful. And I love challenge. I've always loved challenging myself and trying to play things that seem unreachable. And just recently, actually, like once quarantine hit, I started doing that again, where it had been a long time since I learned an Elliott Smith song. And I just went and spent like 6 hours at the park around the corner from my house, revisiting things and learning songs that I hadn't learned yet. And it, like, I don't know, you forget, like sometimes, you know, it's easy to get into patterns and ruts. And when you learn other people's songs, especially that you adore so much and that are challenging for you, it like reawakens different parts of your brain and your heart and your soul of just like, oh, okay, like I think I quickly started writing some other songs, like once I started learning those again, and they don't sound anything like what I was learning, but it was so inspiring to me. And just, I was like, damn it, like why did it take me that long to revisit that? So I'm glad I did.
It's 2:45 in the morning and I'm putting myself on warning. Waking up in an unknown place with a recollection you have erased.
Oh, you know what's actually one of the things that stuck out to me was I always loved Elliott's use of expletives because it never felt contrived. It always felt very natural, like he was talking to you. And I think that was something I was very judgmental about, or I guess maybe still am, when like a, it seems like someone's adding something in because, you know, maybe they already wrote the song, and then it's like, what will make this sound more badass? Like, and I always, it always felt so natural. when Elliot, you know, he's tired of living in a cloud. If you want to say shit now, you better do it out loud. I can just see him saying that to somebody. And yeah, I love that. I just love how, I think I mentioned earlier, it sounds like this song was written. 2:45 is a very specific hour. It's like it's like that liminal space of like anything can happen. Maybe you just got out of the bar, you're drunk, you made a mistake. You know, it starts with him wandering out. He's going out sleepwalking and he's hearing all these voices. And, you know, sometimes it's good or not good to make decisions at that, you know, weird hour in the morning or night, whatever you would consider it to be. But it seems like it was recorded or written, like, yeah, literally at that hour and that hushed space and how he sings it. And yeah, it just, I many a night listened to that song going to bed, probably around the same hour, but it's a very special song.
Looking for somebody's arms to wave away past harms. Walking at odds in a circle, both of you can just fade to black. Walking at odds in a circle, been pushed away.
So thanks to Jessica Dobson for taking part in the podcast. And Jessica's band Deep Sea Diver are releasing their third studio album in mid-October, so that one will be well worth checking out in a month or so when it's available. And that's pretty much it for today's episode. Of course, please do remember to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts if you're listening there. And you can follow us on social media as well if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening with the show. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Lastly, thanks again to our guest today, Jessica Dobson. Thanks also to Elizabeth Wood-Stanley for producing this podcast with me. And most importantly, thank you for listening to it. To play us out, let me now hand over to Zach Freitas, who's going to tell us about his favourite Elliott Smith song. Thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Zach Freitas. I'm a singer-songwriter from Monterey, California. And my favourite Elliott Smith song is My New Freedom. For many reasons, because first and foremost, I'm a big drinker myself and a romantic, and that song really captures what it is after a breakup, the kind of feeling you get to either start drinking again or like go on a binge, and there's like a fearlessness in what he's saying. It's very real and sort of disappointed there's not a real recording of that. You have the live version that was released on the reissue of the remastered version of Either Or. And I remember having to find that song on YouTube, and right when I heard it, I was like, I have to learn this song. And another reason why I really love it is because it sounds like a letter too. You know, it's like that Bob Dylan-esque talking to you in a spiteful kind of way. And it's so real. You could tell he went through that. He didn't just come up with that in the dead of the night. You know, it's like he went through that. You don't get songs like that from just ideas, I don't think. I think he talked a lot from experience, and it's amazing how he did that. It's alchemical, you know, it's like transmuting something. And I mean, that song, it's still pretty dark, you know, but it's beautiful in a way.